Today we will discuss the case of P.D. Gupta versus Ramamurthy, 1997, 7 SEC 147. I will give you a few seconds to open your case material and just come to part B, professional ethics, and section E. There you will get the case P.D. Gupta versus Ramamurthy. This case is basically related to violation of Rule 22 of Standards of Professional Conduct and Etiquette. These rules, as we know, are framed under Section 49(1)(c) of the Advocates Act 1961. Now let us start this case, P.D. Gupta versus Ramamurthy. Just see the first para. This case is related to basically an advocate, and the Rule 22 of Standards of Professional Conduct and Etiquettes. Whether an advocate can purchase property of his client or not, you can say, right? Now let us see the case. The appellant is an advocate practicing in Delhi. He has filed this appeal under Section 38 of the Advocates Act 1961 against order of the Disciplinary Committee of the Bar Council of India, holding him guilty of misconduct and suspending him for practice for a period of 1 year. This order by the Bar Council of India was passed as the Disciplinary Committee of the Bar Council of Delhi could not dispose of the complaint received by it within a period of 1 year. See, there is a provision in the this Advocates Act when we see that the first of all, the complaint of the professional misconduct of an advocate will be referred to the concerned state bar council, and if it fails to take any action, or if it, you can say, it fails to dispose of that complaint within a period of 1 year, it will be transferred to the Bar Council of India. It is under Section 36B of the Act, right? So here in this case, this order by the Bar Council of India was passed by as the Disciplinary Committee of the Bar Council of Delhi could not dispose of the complaint received by it within a period of 1 year, and proceedings has thus been transferred to the Bar Council of India under Section 36B of the Act. Section 36B enjoins upon the Disciplinary Committee of the State Bar Council to dispose of the complaint received by it under Section 35 of the Act expeditiously, and in any case to conclude the proceedings within 1 year from the date of the receipt of the complaint or the date of the initiation of the proceedings, if at the instance of the State Bar Council. So the state concerned State Bar Council is supposed to take the action under Section 35 expeditiously and to conclude the proceedings. If it fails to do so, the proceedings are transferred to the Bar Council of India under Section 35B after the lapse of 1 year. So in this para 1, we have discussed some provisions of the Advocates Act 1961, such as Section 38, because the appeal is before the Supreme Court against the order passed by the Bar Council of India, and Section 36B, where the matter was transferred to the Bar Council of India automatically after the period of 1 year, and Section 35, where the State Bar Disciplinary Committee is supposed to dispose of the complaint received by it. Now let us come to the para 2. It narrates the facts of the case. What are the facts of the case? Let us see the para 2. One Shri Krishna Das died on 5/1/1980, leaving behind extensive properties, both movable and immovable. One Vidyavati, claiming to be the sister and the only legal heir of Shri Krishna Das, filed a petition under Section 276 of the Indian Succession Act in the court of the District Judge Delhi for grant of probate or the letters of administration to the estate of deceased Shri Krishna Das. We know that when a person is deceased, the heirs file for the grant of probate or the letters of administration, as the case may be, under Section 276 of the Indian Succession Act. This she filed in February 1980. Here it does not seem to be important date, but I will ask you to keep this into mind, because later on this date is very material. This she filed in, it means This petition was filed by Vidyavati in February 1980. It is not that there was any will. The complainant Ram Murthy, who is now respondent before us, and two other persons also laid claim to be the properties of Shri Krishna Das, claiming themselves to be his heirs, and propounding three different wills. They also filed separate proceedings under Section 276 of the Indian Succession Act before the District Judge, Delhi. Since there was a dispute regarding inheritance to the properties of Shri Krishna Das, Vidyavati also filed a civil suit in the Delhi High Court for declaration and injunction against various defendants. These were 23 in numbers. This suit was filed on 10-2-1982. Vidyavati has prayed for a decree of injunction against the defendants, restraining them from trespassing into property or from interfering with or disturbing peaceful possession and enjoyment of immovable properties detailed in Schedule A of the plaint. Last lines of this para. It is stated that this suit is still pending in the Delhi High Court and all the proceedings under Section 276 of the Indian Succession Act filed by various persons related to the estate of Shri Krishna Das have also been transferred from the Court of District Judge, Delhi to the High Court. Now come to para 3. It would appear that Vidyavati also filed various other proceedings respecting the properties left by the deceased Shri Krishna Das against the occupants or otherwise. P.D. Gupta advocate, who is the appellant before us, had been her counsel throughout in all these proceedings. The complaint alleged against him is that though he knew that there was doubt case on the right of Vidyavati inheriting the properties of Shri Krishna Das on account of pendency of various proceedings, and further that the complainant and others has alleged that she was in fact an impostor and her claim to be sister of Shri Krishna Das was false, yet P.D. Gupta advocate purchased the ground floor of property bearing number 4858 Daryaganj from Vidyavati by a sale deed dated 30-12-1982. The complainant also alleges that Vidyavati has been describing herself either as the real sister, stepsister, or even half-blood sister of Shri Krishna Das, which fact was well known to the P.D. Gupta, her counsel. So here, the allegations against Mr. P.D. Gupta is that he knew that there was a doubt case on the rights of the Vidyavati inheriting the properties, how he can purchase that particular property. Para 4, here in this para 4, first 4-5 lines are very important. Just pay attention to it. Para 4. It is not for us to go into the merits or demerits of the controversy raised by the parties in various proceedings, pendings in the courts, and still awaiting adjudication. The grievance of the complainant is as to how an advocate could purchase property from his client, which property is the subject matter of dispute between parties in a court of law. During the course of hearing of this appeal, it was also brought to our notice that the second floor of the property bearing number 4858 Daryaganj was purchased by Suresh Kumar Gupta, son-in-law of advocate P.D. Gupta from Vidyavati. So the ground floor was purchased by Mr. P.D. Gupta advocate, and another floor, you can say, the second floor of this property, it was purchased by the son-in-law of advocate P.D. Gupta. Then again it was brought to our notice that advocate P.D. Gupta sold the property purchased by him in November 1987 for a consideration of rupees 3,40,000 when he himself has purchased the property for rupees 1,80,000 in December 1982. Means nearly after 5 years he sold this particular property for a consideration of rupees 3,40,000 which he himself purchased the property for rupees 1,80,000. Now come to para 5. Be that it is, it may be, the Bar Council of India has commented upon the conduct of P.D. Gupta in buying the property from Vidyavati in the circumstances aforesaid, who had been describing herself sometimes as a half-blood sister and sometimes as a real sister or even stepsister of Shri Krishna Das. The explanation given by P.D. Gupta is that though Vidyavati was the stepsister of Shri Krishna Das, but the latter she always treated her like his real sister. And that is how Vidyavati also at times described herself as the real sister. Now come to para 6. There are some more facts which could also be noted. Vidyavati herself has died, and she is stated to be survived by her only daughter Mayadevi, who is also now dead. Before her death, Vidyavati allegedly executed a will in favor of grandson Anand Prakash Bansal, who is stated to be the son of Mayadevi, bequeathing all her properties to him. Vidyavati and Mayavati died on these particular respective dates. It is stated that, now these lines are important of para 6, these are in the favors of the P.D. Gupta. It is stated that P.P. Bansal, husband of Mayadevi and father of Anand Prakash Bansal, has been acting as general attorney of Vidyavati and instructing P.D. Gupta. Para 7. In support of his case, P.D. Gupta filed affidavit. This line is very important, first 2-3 lines. In support of his case, P.D. Gupta filed affidavit of Anand Prakash Bansal, it means the grandson of the Vidyavati, wherein it is claimed that sale deeds executed by Vidyavati in favor of P.D. Gupta and his son-in-law Suresh Kumar Gupta were without any pressure from anyone and were by free will of Vidyavati. P.D. Gupta has claimed that the complaint filed by Ramurthy is motivated and he himself has no title to the properties of Shri Krishna Das, being no relative of his, and the will propounded by him has been found to be forged as opined by the CFSL CBI laboratory. The fact that the will propounded by Ramurthy is forged or not is still to be decided by the court. So still, as I told you, that the matter is pending before the courts. Let us see the last few lines of this para 7. It is claimed that when Shri Krishna Das died, subject immovable property was plot bearing number 4858 Daryaganj, was got mutated in the name of Vidyavati in the records of the Municipal Corporation of Delhi. And then she got plan sanctioned from the MCD for construction of the house on this plot, and which she did construct and got completion certificate in the year 1981. It is peculiar, rather astounding. See, these comments are made by the Supreme Court about the conduct of the MCD. It is peculiar, rather astounding, how Vidyavati could get the property of Shri Krishna Das mutated in her name when she is yet to be granted letters of administration or declaration to her title. The reason is best known to the officials of the MCD and Vidyavati. Now come to para 8. We examined the two sale deeds transferring this property, one executed in favor of P.D. Gupta and the other in favor of his son-in-law Suresh Kumar Gupta. And we have also examined the proceedings on the basis of which the Bar Council of India came to the conclusion that the P.D. Gupta was guilty of misconduct and he be debarred from practicing for a period of 1 year. When Ramurthy complained that P.D. Gupta has fraudulently purchased the property of deceased Shri Krishna Das, number 4858 Daryaganj, as per the sale deed executed from Vidyavati, as also in the name of his son-in-law Suresh Kumar, knowing fully well that Vidyavati was not the owner of the property, the reply given by P.D. Gupta is as under. This is the when the Ramurthy made the complaint before the Bar Council. This is the reply given by the P.D. Gupta as under in his para 5. Para 5, as stated, is false, misleading and ill-motivated in view of the above submissions. This respondent did purchase the ground floor portion from Srimati Vidyadevi by registered sale deed and sold the same by registered sale deed in November 1987 and has no longer any concern with any of the properties of Srimati Vidyavati. Last lines of this para 5. This respondent believed Srimati Vidyavati as the right owner according to the facts and law and sold it as aforesaid. The applicant is in no way concerned with the rights of the respondent and the matters pending for adjudication is between the complainant and the parties concerned. Here Mr. P.D. Gupta want to convey that he accepted that he purchased the ground floor, but now he says that he has sold the same by registered sale deed in the year 1987 and now he is no longer concerned with any of the properties of Srimati Vidyavati. Now the matter is between the complainant and the parties concerned. Now see, leave para 9. It is just giving some transactions about this amount, what has been given on which date. Come to para 10. Now see, what was the observations of the Bar Council of India? What was the notes that is taken by the Bar Council of India? Para 10. The Bar Council of India has taken note of the following facts. Number one, P.D. Gupta claims to know Vidyavati since 1980 when Shri Krishna Das was alive. He knew Vidyavati closely, and yet contradictory stands were taken by Vidyavati when she varyingly described herself as half-blood sister, real sister or stepsister of Shri Krishna Das. These contradictory stands in fact cast doubt on the very existence of Vidyavati herself. This also created doubt about bona fides of P.D. Gupta, who seemed to be a family lawyer of Vidyavati. Second point, P.D. Gupta knew that the property purchased by him from Vidyavati was the subject matter of litigation and the title of Vidyavati to that property was in doubt. Third point that the Bar Council of India took notice of, huge property situated in Daryaganj was purchased by P.D. Gupta for a mere sum of ₹1,80,000 in 1982. Fourth consideration is, the agreement for sale of property was entered into as far as back on 3/9/1980 and P.D. Gupta has been advancing money to Vidyavati from time to time, which went to show that as per the version of P.D. Gupta, he knew Vidyavati quite well. When P.D. Gupta knew Vidyavati so closely, how could Vidyavati take contradictory stands vis-a-vis her relationship with Shri Krishna Das? See, the amount has been advanced by this Mr. P.D. Gupta to Vidyavati since 1980, means after the death of the Mr. Shri Krishna Das. Now come to para 11. In para 11, there is a findings of Bar Council of India. Let us give a consideration to it before we discuss the observations and decisions given by the Honorable Supreme Court in further paragraphs. Let us see the para 11. What is the finding of the Bar Council of India in relation to this matter? The Bar Council of India was thus of the view that the conduct of P.D. Gupta in these circumstances was unbecoming of professional ethics and conduct. The Bar Council of India also observed, this para 11 is important, where the observation was given of the Bar Council of India. It observed that it is an acknowledged fact that a lawyer conducting the case of his client has a commanding status and can exert influence on his client. As a member of the bar, it is in our common knowledge that the lawyers have started contracting with the clients and enter into bargains that in case of success, he will share the result. A number of instances have been brought in the cases of motor accident claims. No doubt there is no bar for a lawyer to purchase property, but, last lines are important, but on account of common prudence, especially a law-knowing person will never prefer to purchase the property, the title of which is under doubt. Finally, it said, but for the purpose of the present complaint, giving regard to all the circumstances, the committee is of the opinion that the conduct of the respondent is patently unbecoming of a lawyer and against professional ethics. The conduct of the respondent is patently unbecoming of a lawyer and against professional ethics. Consequently, we feel that as an exemplary punishment, Shri P.D. Gupta should be suspended from practice for a period of 1 year so that other erring lawyers should learn a lesson and refrain themselves from indulging in such practice. This was the punishment that was given by the Bar Council of India, Disciplinary Committee of the BCI. Now, para 12. See, here it is related to the Supreme Court's observation and the decision. The question which arises for consideration is, in this particular para 12, this is the issue that is before the Supreme Court. The question which arises for consideration is, in view of the aforementioned facts, is P.D. Gupta advocate guilty of professional or other misconduct? And if so, is the punishment awarded to him disproportionate to the professional or other misconduct of which he has been found guilty? Now here it will be decided whether he is guilty of professional or other misconduct or not. Para 13. This para 13's, here these are the contentions of the appellant advocate. Para 13. Mr. Y.K. Jain, learned counsel, appearing for the appellant P.D. Gupta, submitted that if in a case like this, it was held that a lawyer was guilty of professional misconduct, particularly on a complaint filed by an interested person like Ram Murthy, no lawyer would be able to conduct henceforth the case of his client fearlessly. Mr. Jain said that the aggrieved person,
if any, in this case would have been either Vidyavati, her daughter Maya Devi, or her grandson Anur Prakash Bansal, and neither of them has complained of it. It was also submitted that though the properties was purchased by P.D. Gupta in late 1982, the complaint by Ramamurthy was filed only in 1992. Mr. Jain explained that as how Vidyavati has been varyingly described in various litigations was on account of instruction from her or her attorney, and it was no fault of P.D. Gupta on that account. Whether she was a half-blood sister or whether she was real sister or whether she was stepsister, these were the instructions given by her or her attorney, husband that is, you can say, and there was no fault of P.D. Gupta on that account. Then it was submitted that no specific charges has been framed in the disciplinary proceedings which has caused prejudice to P.D. Gupta in the conduct of his defense. Lastly, it was contended that P.D. Gupta was no longer concerned with the property as he has sold away the same. These are the contentions which are made by Mr. Y.K. Jain, learned counsel appearing for the appellant, P.D. Gupta, advocate. Now come to para 14. This para 14 is very important from your examination point of also and from understanding the case also, especially last few lines, that is, you can say last 11-12 lines are very important. Here in fact the matter is decided in the last these lines. So I will say this para 14 is important. Now see what is that. There appears to be no substance in the submission of Mr. Jain. P.D. Gupta was fully aware of the allegations he was to meet. It was not a complicated charge. He has been sufficiently long in practice. The argument, see, this is related. It says that you have been sufficiently long in practice and you are aware of the what you are doing in this particular your professional life, you can say. He has been sufficiently long in practice. The argument that a charge has not been formulated appears to be more out of the discontentment of P.D. Gupta in being unable to meet the allegations. Now P.D. Gupta says that he has washed his hands of the property and thus he is not guilty of any misconduct. That is not the issue. It is his conduct in buying the property, the subject matter of litigation between the parties from his client on which he could exercise undue influence, especially when there was a doubt case on his client's title to the property. Had P.D. Gupta sold the property back to Vidyavati and got the sale deed in his favor cancelled, something could have been said in his favor. But that is not so. He sold the property to a third person, made profit, and created more complications in the pending suit. P.D. Gupta purchased the properties, which were the subject matters of the dispute for himself and also for his son-in-law, at almost throwaway prices, and thus he himself became a party to the litigation. The conduct of P.D. Gupta cannot be said to be above board. It is not material that Vidyavati or anyone claiming through her has not complained against him. We are concerned with the professional conduct of P.D. Gupta as a lawyer conducting the case of his client. See, these last lines are very important, that the Supreme Court is concerned with the professional conduct of P.D. Gupta as a lawyer conducting the case for his client. A lawyer owes a duty to be fair not only to his client but also to the court as well as to the opposite party in the conduct of the case. Administration of justice is a stream which has to be kept pure and clean. It has to be kept unpolluted. Administration of justice is not something which concerns the bench only. It concerns the bar as well. The bar is the principal ground for recruiting judges. No one should be able to raise a finger about the conduct of a lawyer. While conducting the case, he functions as an officer of the court. These last lines are important. See, here P.D. Gupta in buying the property has in fact subverted the process of justice. His action has raised serious questions about his fairness in the conduct of the trial, touching his professional conduct as an advocate. By his action, he has brought the process of administration of justice into disrepute. This is the observation that is made by the Honorable Supreme Court, that his action has raised serious questions about his fairness in the conduct of the trial, and his action has brought the process of administration of justice into disrepute. Last paragraph, para 15, decision is given by the Honorable Supreme Court. Come to the Bar Council of India and the State Bar Councils are statutory bodies under the Act. These bodies perform varying functions under the Act and the rules framed thereunder. The Bar Council of India has laid standards of professional conduct for the members. See, we have already done these standards of professional conduct and etiquettes. Certain rules are given, rules are framed for the advocates. The Bar Council of India has laid standards of professional conduct for the members. The code of conduct in the circumstances can never be exhaustive. The Bar Council of India and the State Bar Councils are representative bodies of the advocates on their roles and are charged with the responsibility of maintaining discipline amongst members and punishing those who go astray from the path of rectitude set out for them. In the present case, the Bar Council of India, through its disciplinary committee, has considered all the relevant circumstances and has come to the conclusion that P.D. Gupta advocate is guilty of misconduct, and we see no reason to take a different view. We also found no ground to interfere with the punishment awarded to P.D. Gupta in the circumstances of the case. So we can say that in this particular case, the advocate was held guilty of misconduct and he was suspended from practice for a period of 1 year. That's it.